Chapter 4. Who gets BPD and why? In this chapter, looking at the influence of culture on personality, exploring the contribution of childhood challenges, uncovering the biological and genetic factors behind BPD. Not everyone who has a horrible childhood experience ends up with borderline personality disorder, BPD. However, most people with BPD report difficult or traumatic childhoods. Recent studies suggest that combinations of genetic influences accompanied by highly challenging developmental events are usually present in people who develop BPD. In addition, culture and society create conditions that either facilitate or inhibit the development of BPD. Scientists can't pinpoint a single, clear pathway that leads to the emergence of BPD in a particular person. Consider the flu as a rough analogy. People don't come down with the flu every time they're exposed to the flu virus. Other factors, such as the person's genetic makeup, general health, levels of current stress, and past history, having received a flu shot, for example, make a difference in whether or not a certain person will come down with the flu. Similarly, exposure to one or two risk factors doesn't cause BPD in everyone. In this chapter, we explore the ins and outs of the major risk factors for BPD. We also try to show you how various combinations of factors may contribute to the emergence of BPD. Considering culture. Culture is similar to the concept of personality. For more on personality, head to Chapter 2. Personality attempts to capture the essence of a person. Culture attempts to capture the essence of a community. Culture represents enduring patterns of behavior, attitudes, beliefs, and ways of expressing emotions that are common to a large community of people. Culture transmits strong expectations about the way individual members of a particular community are supposed to live their lives. Culture also influences the way people express emotional distress. In most poor countries, for example, intentionally cutting oneself is a rare and confusing event. In wealthier cultures, however, the act of self-mutilation is a relatively common occurrence, especially among troubled adolescents. Some emotional disorders, such as schizophrenia and obsessive-compulsive disorder, occur at about the same rate and in similar ways across most cultures. See Jerome and Irene Levine's Schizophrenia for Dummies, Wiley, and our own Obsessive-Compulsive Disorder for Dummies, Wiley, for more information about these two disorders. However, BPD symptoms appear at different rates in different cultures. The varying social norms that exist across cultures may explain this difference in the rate of occurrence, at least in part. The next sections discuss the following five issues that differ across cultures and that may impact how frequently BPD occurs. Individualism, adolescence, entitlement, family instability, technology. Individualism, emphasizing me versus we. Since before the days of the Declaration of Independence, American culture has strongly encouraged individualism. Today, parents, teachers, and other role models encourage young people to strive for achievement on their own, to be all that they can be. Success in the United States is measured by how much more you accomplish, or how much better you are at a particular skill than everyone else around you. People in the United States, and in many other modern societies, are movers. People move away from their families to better their own lives or to experience something new. Many modern industrialized countries share the culture that celebrates the individual. In contrast, more traditional cultures, such as those in the Far East, encourage community, family, and interdependence. These cultures emphasize bringing honor to the family group In traditional cultures, people have more structure within their communities. Families, both immediate and extended, provide support for one another. Unlike more modern cultures, being part of a group is more important than being an individual in traditional cultures. What does the emphasis on the individual versus the group have to do with BPD? Researchers have lamented the astonishing lack of studies on BPD across various cultures. Although symptoms of BPD clearly appear at varying rates across cultures, no one knows the exact frequency of BPD around the world. However, a number of researchers have noted that many of the symptoms of BPD occur more often in cultures that emphasize the needs, values, and priorities of individuals over those of the community at large. Some scientists believe that a concept known as self-absorption supports this observation. Self-absorption refers to a narrowed focus on oneself and a heightened concern for evaluating that self. Social scientists have discovered that an excessive focus on oneself substantially increases the risk for a wide range of physical and emotional problems, including eating disorders, anger, alcoholism, drug abuse, self-harm, depression, anxiety, sensation-seeking. In Chapter 3, you can see that most of these problems are common symptoms of BPD. A number of psychologists have suggested that an excessive emphasis on the self creates stress and pressure that lead to these and other similar symptoms. A community with strong social connections and an effective support system may eliminate much of this pressure. See the Sleuthing Self-Absorption sidebar for more information about the relationship between emotional problems and an excessive focus on the self. Warning. Please understand that we're not blaming people with BPD for being too self-absorbed. No one wants or asks for BPD, and people don't often seek out self-absorption. In our opinion, modern culture encourages this trait among its people. Furthermore, self-absorption is but one of many contributors to the development of BPD. Sleuthing self-absorption. Sometimes nature creates unexpected experiments. Susan Nolan Hoeksema, a professor of psychology at Yale University, stumbled upon one such experiment during an organized study of her own. In the late 1980s, Nolan Hoeksema measured a group of college students for their tendency to ruminate about themselves. Rumination involves focusing on oneself and the causes of one's problems, rather than on coming up with solutions. 14 days after her experiment, the area near the college experienced an earthquake. 10 days later, Nolan Hoeksema's researchers went back to the students they'd previously assessed and measured their levels of depression and symptoms of stress. The researchers assessed the students' levels of stress and depression again 7 weeks after the earthquake. They found that students who were ruminators had developed significantly higher levels of depression right after the earthquake than people who weren't ruminators, and that their stress and depression levels were sustained at the final assessment 7 weeks after the earthquake. Many other studies have shown similar trends. For example, several studies have shown that increasing someone's self-focus causes undesirable spikes in depressive and anxious feelings, as well as a reduced ability to solve problems. These experiments studied the effects of rumination by using various techniques to increase self-focus. For example, one such experiment asked subjects to spend 8 minutes reflecting on their personal traits and emotional states. Another experiment asked participants to look at themselves in a mirror for a particular period of time. And a third experiment asked subjects to write paragraphs that contained numerous references to themselves. All these strategies for increasing self-focus caused an increase in negative feelings and lowered the ability to solve problems. Adolescence and BPD. Adolescence is a relatively modern concept that refers to the transition period between childhood and adulthood. Adolescence emerged as a consequence of the Industrial Revolution, as a way to keep children in school and out of sweatshops. Not such a bad idea. However, as it has evolved, adolescence has become a tumultuous and treacherous time for many teens. Arguably, adolescence brings with it large chunks of free time, which means numerous opportunities for teens to engage in self-destructive behaviors. Pressures mount for teens to have more, be more, and be noticed. Adolescence is a time when psychological disorders, including signs of personality disorders, such as BPD, emerge. Problems with gangs, violence, drug use, sensation-seeking, eating disorders, and risky sexual behavior have burgeoned among adolescents in the past 4 or 5 decades. Of course, we're not saying that adolescence itself causes emotional disorders. After all, many adolescents mature into adulthood with no sign of any emotional disorders. However, from a historical perspective, BPD symptoms and behaviors have only been written about in the past century or so, which coincides with the emergence of adolescence as a feature of modern culture. When kids were busy milking cows and gathering crops, much less adolescent angst existed among teens. Perhaps if we can give teens more important tasks than texting, video gaming, and hanging out at the mall, they won't be as easily seduced by self-destructive behaviors. Entitlement, feeling too good. In recent years, the value of suffering, both physical and emotional, has diminished. A few hundred years ago, people admired others for their ability to endure hardship. For example, ancient religious writings are full of messages extolling the virtues of suffering. Many people believed that suffering strengthened character and helped people appreciate the gifts of life. That message has changed dramatically in modern industrialized cultures. Today, people look to pills to combat the slightest emotional distress, and advertising pushes people to treat their frowns, wrinkles, and splotches like they do diseases. Even normal grief in response to loss has become an abnormal condition in need of medical treatment. Unfortunately, an inability to accept any negative feelings typically increases a person's vulnerability to being overwhelmed by emotional distress. People who believe that feeling good all the time is a basic human right end up feeling entitled to having all their needs met. As a result, they become sharply disappointed when the world fails to cater to their every whim. Don't get us wrong. We like feeling good like most other people. We're definitely not promoting the idea of suffering for suffering's sake. However, as we note in Chapter 2, the abilities to tolerate frustration, delay gratification, and recover from adversity are hallmarks of a healthy personality, and people who lack these abilities often struggle to remain calm and buoyant with every little mishap that comes their way. Family instability. Today, especially in Western cultures, more children grow up in single-parent families than ever before. Although divorce rates have peaked and then decreased slightly in the past 10 or 20 years, they remain much higher than they were in 1950. Furthermore, fewer people marry today than in the past, and when they do marry, they marry later in life. In addition, large extended families consisting of multiple generations, cousins, aunts, uncles, and grandparents, aren't as common as they were in the past. Today, immediate families, mom, dad, and 2 kids, for example, spread out across the world. As a result, sources of emotional support are much less reliable and stable than they once were. Again, we don't know to what extent family instability contributes to the development of BPD, but social scientists have long known that social support serves as a strong protective force against declining mental and physical health. Technology and its isolating effects. Technology, in the form of computers, cell phones, and the internet, have increased productivity, access to information, and the ability to communicate, Personally, we love computers. They've enabled us to write more and to research with greater ease than ever. Sometimes we spend days at a time holed up in our offices, banging away on the computer and not speaking to other living beings. Yet, because we don't want to lose real, face-to-face communication, we try to monitor our isolation to make sure we don't go overboard with cyber communication. Unfortunately, some people find themselves drawn into a digital, virtual world that becomes more exciting than their real lives. They spend day after day socializing on MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, and online gaming sites. They lose contact with the people around them, and they become fully absorbed in their virtual selves. Consider the following ways in which many people choose to relate to others. Joining a World of Warcraft team rather than the soccer team. Participating in live webcasts rather than meeting up with friends at a local coffee shop. Posting comments on discussion boards rather than communicating face-to-face in social settings. Conversing via emails and text messages rather than phone conversations. Being a part of anonymous online support groups rather than attending local support group meetings. Cyber snooping friends' profiles rather than getting to know them personally. Of course, some of these ways of techno-relating are fun and beneficial. The social components of the web appeal to many people because they offer easier, safer, and quicker ways to connect to others. No one really knows to what extent isolation from overuse of technological ways of relating to other people contributes to the development of BPD or other emotional problems. However, technology can prevent the in-person contact you need to build relationships and trust. To get better, people with BPD need real relationships, real social support, and real feedback about their behavior. Childhood challenges and the increased risk of BPD. Mental health professionals widely ascribe to the theory that the events of a person's childhood greatly affect mental health in adolescence and adulthood. Parents and the way they parent greatly influence the mental and emotional states of their children throughout their lives. Other family members, peers, schools, neighborhoods, friends, and even strangers also impact children. In addition, random events, such as hurricanes and house fires, can change young people's lives forever. As important as the impact of childhood is on people, however, keep in mind that children are quite resilient. Many mental health professionals have allowed their opinions to run ahead of the data in drawing connections between childhood problems and disorders in adulthood. As research has shown, the development of BPD involves much more than just poor parenting or even traumatic events. Many kids experience significant traumas as well as neglectful parents, yet they manage to lead emotionally healthy lives. A biological vulnerability usually plays at least a part in the development of BPD. See the Bringing Biology into the BPD Equation section for more information. Nevertheless, difficult childhoods do raise the risks for developing BPD. The three major factors that can affect childhood negatively and, as a result, can increase risk for BPD in some cases are parenting styles, abuse and trauma, early separation and loss. Remember, BPD has no single cause. Most of the issues we describe in the following sections must occur in extreme forms and/or for a very prolonged period of time to increase the risk of BPD. Even then, they usually require some interaction with biological and cultural factors for BPD to emerge. Problematic parenting. Most of what mental health professionals know about the parents of people who develop BPD comes from reports made by the people who suffer from BPD. But when people suffer great distress, they tend to focus on and recall negative events far more than positive ones. When they feel better, Their memories of certain events have a somewhat more cheerful tone. As a result, researchers quarrel over how much weight to give studies based on such recollections. Unfortunately, far fewer studies objectively look at parenting styles at a given point in time and then follow the outcomes in terms of how children function in adulthood. Therefore, current professional perspectives on parenting and its true long-term effects remain somewhat murky. At the same time, mental health professionals have reached a reasonable degree of consensus that certain parenting practices do harm children. The next sections take a look at some problematic parenting styles. Emotional invalidation. Psychologist Marsha Linehan promotes the idea that emotional invalidation plays a critical role in fostering the development of BPD. Emotional invalidation refers to a variety of ways in which parents diminish, demean, discount, and disqualify children's emotional experiences. Parents who emotionally invalidate their kids deliver a wide variety of messages to their kids that ultimately teach them to distrust or disbelieve their own emotional reactions. In the following list, we explore some of the more common messages parents use to invalidate their children's emotions and describe how these messages affect the children's feelings. You shouldn't feel that way. Parents send messages like this one when their kids have been hurt or upset. Parents may feel uncomfortable with their children's distress and thus attempt to squelch it by using this message. They may think they're helping their kids calm down, but the net effect of the message is to induce guilt and to invalidate the kids' feelings. What are you crying about? Most people don't enjoy listening to other people cry. In fact, some parents have a very low tolerance for dealing with the extremely grating noise that crying and wailing generate. Unfortunately, children can't really respond to this question because they're feeling overwhelmed and often simply don't know the answer. With this message, parents imply that distress and sadness aren't acceptable emotions. You're exaggerating. This message essentially tells children that they're fundamentally misinterpreting reality. As a result, the kids learn to distrust their perceptions. This message attempts to suppress emotions rather than teach kids how to regulate them. That's just not true. Sometimes children come to parents with opinions about relationships, school, or even politics. Rather than encourage independent thought, parents lead children to distrust their own viewpoints and, instead, rely on their parents' superior knowledge. This statement is also quite a conversation stopper. You're just like your father, brother, uncle, aunt, or whomever. This message invalidates the very identities of children. Generally, the comparisons to other family members aren't particularly flattering. Using this message inhibits children's growth and their capacity to believe in their own abilities. I wish you could be more like your sister, cousin, father, aunt, or whomever. This message tells kids that they aren't good enough and that their parents are disappointed in who they are. Again, this message erodes children's identities. Grow up. By nature, children are sometimes loud, annoying, and, well, just kids. Parents who can't tolerate frustration commonly put their kids down for boisterous childlike behavior. This message not only fails to change kids' behaviors, but also makes them feel guilty for acting like kids. Tell me something good that's happened. Some parents say this when their kids report an unhappy or sad event. Instead of validating the sadness, these parents believe that redirecting the child to focus on more pleasant events will help them learn to feel better. Instead, this approach teaches kids to suppress their true emotions. You're being selfish. In truth, most kids are a little selfish. They haven't yet learned to fully appreciate the needs, wants, and perspectives of others or to balance those needs with their own. Unfortunately, though, This message doesn't help them become less selfish. Rather, it invalidates kids for being true to their nature. You're way too young to try something like that. You could get hurt, get in trouble, get lost, or whatever. Always ask me first before you do anything. Some parents use messages like this one because of their own insecurities and desire to protect their kids. Unfortunately, this approach suppresses kids' curiosity, independence, motivation, confidence, and competence. Growing up in a family in which emotional invalidation dominates the atmosphere can be very hurtful for kids. They learn either to passively withdraw to avoid these messages or to demonstrate extreme emotions and behaviors to obtain recognition and attention. Emotional invalidation can also lead to more serious situations. Consider how the emotional invalidation a child receives from her mother can contribute to a sexually abusive situation and further harm the child. The following story about Daniela illustrates this point. "Mommy, please don't go out again," 8-year-old Daniela whines. "I need my fun time without kids getting in my way. Besides, Uncle Gordon is going to watch you," her mother responds. "But I hate Uncle Gordon," Daniela declares. "Don't talk about your uncle that way. He's always been good to you," her mother scolds. "But he's creepy. I don't like the way he smells, and he gives me yucky wet kisses," Daniela says. "That's not true. He's a nice man. You need to show him respect," her mother argues. "He always grabs me and makes me sit on his lap. He bounces me up and down like a baby. I don't like it," Daniela pleads. "Listen, you need to be nice to your family. Uncle Gordon is a nice man. Stop this complaining. I don't want to hear any more about your uncle," her mother admonishes. Many kids like Daniela know when something is wrong, but they don't have the words to express their concerns fully and completely. Given her mother's invalidating comments, Daniela is likely to stop complaining, even as her uncle's inappropriate touching may slowly escalate into full-blown sexual molestation. Warning: Daniela's story doesn't contain enough information for you to conclude that sexual molestation was actually occurring. However, parents can't decide whether a child's concerns are legitimate when they frequently invalidate their kids' emotions and statements. Furthermore, because molestation often begins at a low level and slowly escalates over time, parents have to make sure their children feel totally safe in sharing their concerns with them. Dysfunctional and disorganized families. An old cartoon depicts a man alone in a huge conference hall with a banner that reads, "Worldwide Meeting of Those with Functional Families," draped across the stage. Although we may have slightly misquoted the cartoon, the point is that most people have at least some degree of dysfunction in their families. In contrast, dysfunction and disorganization dominate in some families. Dysfunction occurs when parents experience high marital discord and conflict. Parents often overtly express that conflict in the form of frequent loud fighting that fills children with anxiety and even fear that one or both parents may leave them. Other parents express that marital discord behind closed doors. In these cases, the parents may cover up and fail to talk about their disagreements. Although this approach may sound less stressful to children, most professionals believe that sweeping conflicts under the rug only makes them fester. Children pick up on the subtle signs of tension, and when parents don't openly resolve their conflicts with each other, their kids fail to learn the skills needed for resolving their own conflicts. Dysfunction also arises when parents place confusing roles and expectations on their children. Some parents feel virtually incapable of parenting and place excessive responsibilities on their oldest children, virtually turning them into parents of the younger kids. Other parents take the opposite tack and treat their kids as incompetent, essentially infantilizing them. Some homes are filled with disorganized chaos, something that children also find difficult to understand and manage. Such chaos comes in a wide range of forms, including the following: financial woes, unpaid bills, and bill collectors; frequent job changes; constant moves from one neighborhood to another; conflicts that cause various household members to move in and out; substance abuse; incarceration; neighborhood crime; disability, serious illness, or severe emotional disorders in one or more of the parents. These types of chaotic atmospheres challenge children and make understanding their own and other people's emotions very difficult. Disorganized chaos also interferes with a child's developmentally crucial task of learning how to regulate or control emotions. Abuse and trauma. Numerous studies have demonstrated that people with BPD have a high rate of abuse, inflicted by either their parents or someone else, namely a relative, a bully, or a stranger, in their childhoods. Because of such data, some professionals suggest that BPD is actually a complicated form of post-traumatic stress disorder, also called PTSD. It's an intense anxiety disorder that frequently occurs sometime after a highly traumatic event. See Mark Goulston's Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder for Dummies, Wiley, for more about PTSD. However, most researchers now contend that BPD is not a form of PTSD, even though trauma certainly raises the risk of developing BPD. One reason researchers believe BPD is separate from PTSD is that BPD can and does develop in people who don't show clear signs of trauma in their childhoods. Biological vulnerabilities. See the Bringing Biology into the BPD Equation section. Combine with other difficulties, such as emotionally invalidating experiences or chaotic childhoods, which we explain in the preceding two sections, and lead to BPD in some people. On the other hand, some people undergo traumatic events and don't develop BPD or even PTSD. Many of the people who demonstrate such resilience to trauma likely do so as a result of their genetic makeup, which enables them to endure hardships that many others can't. Other factors, such as highly supportive families, the presence of an especially involved caring adult, or psychotherapy, may also serve a protective function for some people who experience traumatic events. Furthermore, the type of trauma children experience makes a difference in whether they develop BPD or other emotional disorders later in life. Trauma inflicted by a trusted family member appears to have a greater impact than trauma inflicted by a stranger. Sexual molestation that goes on for years typically has a greater impact than a single event of molestation. Incest usually increases the risk of BPD and other emotional disorders more than molestation by a stranger does. Keep in mind, though, that any event involving abuse or trauma of children causes harm. Yet, in the absence of genetic vulnerability or other risk factors, many children eventually manage to overcome some of the damaging effects. Warning. If you have BPD, you shouldn't assume that you were abused as a child. Unlike claims that people have made to the contrary, most instances of trauma tend to be at least partially recalled over the years. Therapies based on the assumption that everyone with BPD was abused often guide people to construct memories of events that evidence later shows never occurred. Separation and loss. Unexpected losses and separation from one or more parents for extended periods of time contribute to an increased risk of BPD. Such losses can be quite traumatic because they disrupt the development of normal bonding between children and their parents. Children who lose parents often become more anxious and depressed, in part because they worry about who will take care of them. However, much like the case with trauma and abuse, some children lose a parent and overcome the effects of the loss, for the most part. Such recovery is more likely when these kids have an innate biological resilience and don't have the other risk factors of BPD. See the next section for more about how biology affects BPD. Genetics and biology. BPD in the family tree. Studies confirm that BPD runs in families. If one member has BPD, the chances of a close relative also having BPD are about 10 times greater. But keep in mind that many people in the same family live together or have similar childhoods. So childhood, rather than genetics, may be responsible for the higher rates of BPD in the same family. At this point, you may be wondering how to figure out what's in the genes and what comes from the environment. The following sections take a closer look at biology and its effects on raising the risks for BPD. Studying twins to find genetic causes. Twin studies help to untangle the heritability question. Remember that identical twins share the same genetic makeup, but fraternal twins don't. Most twins, regardless of whether they're identical or fraternal, share the same environment as children. You can look at the relationship between genetics and BPD by comparing these two types of twins. Subtract the number of fraternal twins who have BPD from the number of identical twins who have BPD, and you can get a decent estimate of the role genetics have in the development of BPD. Only a few of these types of studies have been done. They tend to be expensive, and scientists have a hard time finding enough twins who have BPD. But the results suggest that 40 to 60% of BPD is predicted by genetic factors. Warning. We're not saying BPD is an inherited trait, like blue or brown eyes. Indeed, BPD is much more complicated than that. What someone with BPD may have inherited are tendencies to be impulsive, have unstable, highly reactive emotions. See Chapter 3 for more information about both of these contributors and the problem of BPD. If you throw together a couple inherited tendencies to be impulsive and have unstable emotions with other risk factors, such as problematic parenting and cultural influences, you may be on the fast track for developing BPD. Bringing biology into the BPD equation. Genetics influence BPD because of their impact on the brain, but genes don't directly make someone impulsive or highly emotional. Rather, genes alter the brain in ways that increase the likelihood of impulsiveness and strong emotional responses. Researchers are investigating three specific biological areas for their influences on BPD. These biological areas are brain chemistry. Nerve cells in the brain communicate through chemical messengers called neurotransmitters. Serotonin, one such neurotransmitter, seems to be particularly influential in BPD. Serotonin is involved in aggression, impulsivity, and mood stability. Studies have found that many people with BPD have disruptions in the way serotonin is used in the brain. However, medications that increase the availability of serotonin in the brain haven't been as helpful in treating BPD as they have been in treating other emotional disorders, such as depression and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Therefore, the exact role of serotonin in BPD remains unclear. Brain structures. The brain has numerous structures that process information, emotions, memories, and events. Recent studies have linked problems in the emotion-regulating circuits of the brain to BPD. People with BPD appear to have excess gray matter, the working cells of the brain, in the emotional interpretation hub of the brain, known as the amygdala. They also have less gray matter in the front portion of the brain that inhibits emotions. No wonder people with BPD often react very emotionally to events that others view as trivial and have trouble calming down after they're upset. Brain functions. Brain functioning refers to the tendency of certain brain areas to activate or inactivate under various conditions. The brains of people with BPD function differently than the brains of people without the disorder. For example, a sophisticated system in the brain senses when to be uncomfortable in social situations. This system corresponds to what people generally call street sense or gut reactions. This complex brain system doesn't work properly in people with BPD. Thus, they fail to interpret situations and other people's intentions accurately. Another brain system, called the executive system, helps people make rational, thoughtful decisions. These decisions take into account both past experiences and current information, and they also consider future implications. People with BPD often have executive systems that don't function properly, which results in impulsive decisions. So, what came first? The chicken or the egg? Did these deficiencies in brain chemistry, structure, and function come before or after BPD? At the time of this book's writing, even mental health professionals don't know. They need more research before they can make an accurate assessment.